Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and once again, we are bringing you a session from the 2017 January Lacrosse Industry Summit held at the Baltimore Hilton in advance of the U.S. Lacrosse Convention. We are joined by three notable specialists in the lacrosse retail industry representing lacrosse specialty brick and mortar, lacrosse e-commerce, and team sales. We're very grateful for these gentlemen for joining us. We hope that you enjoy the conversation. If you like what you hear, leave a rating and a review on iTunes, tell a friend, hit us up on social media, and be sure to check back on Wednesday as Kyle Devitt and Chris Rosenthal get you ready for this weekend's MLL semifinal action with the MLL podcast.
This is a panel that I've been looking forward to for a while, especially all day. It's going to be moderated by Terry Foy, publisher of Inside Lacrosse again, John Eriks, who's the president of Lax.com. We have Ben Connery here, who's the lacrosse manager for BSN Sports, and Jerry Scott, who is the director of lacrosse for True Temper. Terry?
Thanks, Dan. So by way of introduction, I just wanted to set a little bit of a baseline for the way that I've gone about thinking about this conversation. Obviously, we're here at a lacrosse industry summit, and I think that, there's always a subtext of commercialization and monetization around the sport and the group of constituents that are involved on the professional level with that sport. And I think that, the rubber meets the road in almost every respect as it relates to retail operations within lacrosse. And I think that there's so much about this moment in time that makes this conversation really valuable and really important. I think that from a grander culture perspective, the world of retail is changing as rapidly as pretty much any other sector of business. And then certainly as it relates to lacrosse and all of the things that we've discussed today, whether it be participation rates or, as we'll discuss in the next panel, the changing face of what consumers buy and what they value and how they want it. All of it comes together in this idea of how do they acquire it? How do lacrosse players get the stuff they need to play the game or to support their passion and love for the sport? And so as I think about retail, and particularly as it applies to lacrosse, I think about it as like a five-channel or five different type of service or five different ways in which, or five different entities from which you can purchase. And so two that are not represented here that I think the largest mainstream and sporting culture are familiar with are Amazon and certainly what they represent in the dot-com and e-commerce space, and then Big Box, I think led by Dick's Sporting Goods, and what they represent as well. I think what is so valuable about the perspective that these three guys share is the specific focus and attention on the sport of lacrosse and the way in which they, like almost all of us in this room, wake up thinking about it every day. And so between Jerry, whose experience with Lax World represents a relationship to the brick-and-mortar experience, to John and the way that his stewardship of Lax.com represents the perspective of lacrosse-specific e-com, and then Ben with the unique perspective about team sales and how that coalesces, I think that we can learn from these three folks how their individual point of view can inform all of our understanding of what is next for the way that consumers are going to buy lacrosse gear. And I want to start with Jerry. The thought of the way that lacrosse has grown, and let's take ourselves back 20 years ago, is that the specialty store represented something of a community hub that, as lacrosse was still in its niche identity phase, was special. And I think that it helped to build something of a foundation for the sport in the way that it's grown over the last 20 years. How do you trace that? Particularly, how do you trace it through the modernization process?
Well, I'll date myself a little bit. Back when I first started at Lax World at retail, there were bucket helmets and the short shorts with the 3-inch stripe on it. And it started in Kenilworth for us when I was at Lax World, and it was all about, we called them Lax Rats, the Lax Dudes. It was a beacon for the community to come and identify with the sport, and we kind of help make playing the game cool. As it's gotten more modernized and more mainstream, some of that's been lost, where it's more of a commodity item. You kind of lose that identity. I feel it's harder to keep that in and rein it in. Back when we would have bus trips that come in from New Jersey, New York, Long Island, anybody that coming through the area would stop. We'd feed them pizza. The teams would shop. They'd take pictures in the store. It was a true destination location. And I just think you've lost that now. We had to pull from a much bigger area. And our goal there was to grow the sport. We would have clinics, coaches, clinics, conventions, try to educate and grow the pie rather than take a bigger slice of the pie. The goal was, let's make the pie bigger, and everybody gets their own fair share. Now, back then, there was no internet. It was catalog mail order, and we still had the team side as well. But to make it work, you had to do all three things well. As it's grown into specialization, the online companies make it more difficult for just retail only and vice versa. But you're fishing in a much smaller pond now, I feel. And that retail store, that specialty store, helped define you as a lacrosse player. You were a dude. I knew half the kids in there by name because their moms would drop them off in the store and they'd go get their hair done at About Faces, or they were in there every other day. Dad was in asking for advice on equipment, how to string a stick, how to coach. And that retail, it was just a beacon for growing the sport, growing the game, getting awareness, and it was just cool to play lacrosse.
And I think that you mentioned it was pre-internet, and I think that my unique perspective is formed by having grown up in Cleveland, Ohio, where there was, when I was playing, no lacrosse specialty store, and so coming of age at the turn of the increased access to the internet, I utilized online destinations as the supplement for that. And I think that Lax.com represents a good portion of the way in which that interacted and that supplemented people's understanding, particularly as the sport nationalized. As we, kind of turn our focus to the last 5 years, John, how do you kind of see the trend lines developing, and how do you think that the presence of lacrosse-specific retail has shaped the world of lacrosse consumerism?
I think for us, we certainly capitalized on the growth from 2010 to 2015. When we took over the business in 2010, big states like Florida, Texas, California, they were in our top 12 revenue states. Now those three states are in our top four the last 3 years. So from an online perspective, we've been able to capitalize on those big states where you don't have the brick and mortar set up. And also we've been able to capitalize on just the changing environment that we all live in, right? People don't have time to go to brick and mortar and shop. They don't have time to do errands on a Saturday because they've got chores with their kids or games with their kids. So for us, it's the ability to service that customer 24/7. Providing a really deep breadth of inventory and servicing, being able to service not only the beginners but also the kids who are the diehard junkies for the gear.
And I think that in the way that team sales represent the kind of organic next step of how a sport grows, right? So the formalization of whether it's club or scholastic sports yields bigger scale, yields more attention from large organizations like BSN and the way in which they regard lacrosse as an opportunity. So, Ben, I think I'm interested in how BSN's perspective on lacrosse has changed, modified, and developed over the last 5 years and where it sits right now.
Yeah, so I'm sure some people in the room aren't as familiar with BSN Sports as others. BSN Sports is the largest team dealer in the United States, based out of Dallas, Texas, 2,300 employees. We're the largest Nike team dealer, Under Armour team dealer, and lacrosse is our fastest-growing sport category. So it's very important to BSN because it shows that we can get into a new market that we hadn't been into before. Traditionally, our company, our lifeblood of our company, has been our 750 sales pros that we have across the country. These sales pros, in my eyes, kind of serve as one-stop shop retail stores. They have access to everything that any retail store has access to. So as the retail markets shifted and Amazon's gotten into the world of, they have a patent on a flying warehouse now. So in the next 10 years, you may see a flying warehouse above the football stadium there delivering goods with drones, literally. So the retail market's changed, and you know, we are in the retail market because of our sales pros, but ultimately it's our, you know, lacrosse has been a category for us that's grown. So how we've handled lacrosse is we've handled it differently at BSN. It's not the same as a football or baseball or basketball, a sport where, you know, pretty much everybody's kind of comfortable with it. Lacrosse is uncomfortable for a lot of our sales pros and a lot of our customers as well. As it's growing in these new emerging markets, the buyers are not educated in the sport. So it's my job to educate our sales pros on how to sell the product efficiently and effectively and at a margin dollar that makes sense for us corporately. So we've kind of taken all the tools that we've learned from just dealing in team sales the last 15 or 20 years or so, applied them to a new emerging sport category such as lacrosse, and it's now a new tool for those 750 sales pros to go out there, sell a new category, and make more money ultimately.
And so it speaks to a more general question that I have for each of you, which is what, getting back to the original point of why this panel has unique value, and it's lacrosse familiarity counts as one of the largest assets of each of your representative perspectives. My question is, how important is it? How much does lacrosse, the familiarity with lacrosse, Jerry, you talked about being able to counsel dads on how to coach when they would come into the store. How where does that fall in the priority structure of what makes each area of or vertical of consumerism unique and important?
Well, I would say from a retail standpoint, you need to be, to survive, you need to be the expert. There's nothing wrong with online shopping, and that's going to continue. But for, I always say, you graduate 10% of your consumer base in the lacrosse market. Core consumers are 8 to 18, boys and girls. They go to college, they're not real consumers anymore. So how do you capture that new 10% every year that need education? They don't know what to get, where to get it, how it's supposed to fit. You need to keep specialty special, and how do you do that? You have to out-service the big box stores. You have to be involved on the team side, creating those relationships, hopefully you have a relationship with the coaches, drive them into retail, and become an asset to the community and to those parents and coaches. And that's a challenge, and you have to have good help that cares, and you have to have margins that work so you can pay your bills, and it's a struggle.
John, what are your thoughts on that in terms of the way that Lax.com's identity is directly related to the sport? It's not as if
you got to do more than that. You got to do more than just have knowledge. One, you can't have a hockey guy sitting there trying to sell lacrosse, right? So that's, you're already lost that customer. For us, you have to be totally authentic in the sport. Our content, our goal is to be a lacrosse portal, right? So we have traffic all year round of people coming for scores and stats and highlights. We're creating content with people like Paul Rabel or Taylor Cummings. We're providing kind of a year-round value, but then the true value is that breadth of inventory, that breadth of knowledge. All our customer service people are totally up to speed on what are the top sellers, how to fit people, answer every and all questions. You have to service that whole community, right? The community is really small. So for us, it's content, it's the breadth of our inventory, it's team sales, and really kind of providing a comprehensive one-stop solution for the consumer as well as the sport enthusiast. And I think that's where brick and mortar is going to have a really tough time surviving. I mean, let's be real. If you're not doing more to engage the customer, you're not going to survive.
And again, I think that speaks to the only way that you can find market differentiation. And I think, Ben, for you, you talk about how BSN treats lacrosse differently, and I know that there's a lot of focus on things other than your sales folks having the vocabulary to be able to speak to the sport. What are some of the other initiatives?
Yeah, authenticity in our division of lacrosse at BSN Sport is very important. We want to be authentic to that buyer. However, there's no way to change a 50-year-old sales pro for BSN that's a former college football player that's been in sporting goods for the last 30 years. So myself and our team we're the experts. We provide authenticity to that sales pro who has those relationships out in the field. The fact that we don't have retail, I think it's less important for us to engage that end consumer. We're really engaging the athletic director, equipment manager, and coach. And I think those folks, they have the relationship with our sales pro anyways. So as long as they know that they're supported on the back end with authentic lacrosse people such as myself and Joel White, who's in the room as well, the customer is comfortable. And more importantly, our sales pro is comfortable knowing that they have the assets back in Dallas at our corporate office.
Okay. So I think, to shift gears a little bit, John, one of the elements of a successful retail operation is the relationship with the suppliers, the manufacturers. And in lacrosse, there's no question that there's a unique element, unique space. First of all, lacrosse is a sport that's highly intensive on equipment, similar to football, but unlike football, players tend to either buy or own their equipment at higher rates. And so, for example, most football players don't own their helmet and shoulder pads. Most lacrosse players do. That coalesces into a way in which the consumer interacts with every retailer in a unique way. The last 2 to 3 years have been, I don't know what the right word is, in some point of view tumultuous, in other points of view very exciting, in the world of lacrosse manufacturing. How have you seen it develop, change, and move, and what do you kind of forecast as being kind of down the road?
I mean, I think the what's probably triggered that question is the stall in growth, right? So I think coming out of this stall, you've had to address the glut in inventory that's been out there. Manufacturers have overproduced. We're constantly addressing with manufacturers, you got to stop giving stuff away, right? Last 2 years, you've lost that high school market almost, because every event, a kid's walking out of there with a head or helmet or gloves. No other sport does that. You never sign up for a junior tennis tournament and get a new racket, right? Hockey, you're never getting a new stick. So some of that pain and that frustration is self-inflicted. I think what you've also seen is this rise of a number of manufacturers pop up, which is good. It pushes the bigger manufacturers to be more aggressive and valuing their partnerships and marketing the product. So from an online retailer, we welcome the manufacturers because it gives us, again, a deep inventory. We don't have to worry about wall space. We've got a warehouse where we can have everything and show things online and give a customer a really good, broad selection. But from a business point of view, we're really working hard on what partners, what manufacturers are really acting as a partner. You've got to work together to sell strategically and be smart. And you can't, you've got to look a little bit long term. You can't be going down paths of selling direct when you're trying to then support your retailer. And I think that's what has brought a lot of these changes the last 12 months to the table is, how do we do this better?
Sure. So you mentioned a few things there. First, the emergence of new brands, the increased preponderance of those that sell direct to consumer, as well as the glut of inventory, which is also a result of changes within the retail space that I want to get to next. But I don't want to move on before, Jerry, you have an opportunity to speak to this idea of the relationship between retailers and manufacturers as well, since obviously you have a unique perspective having now served on both sides of the equation.
Absolutely. I spent 23 years barking at the manufacturers and fighting for relevance. And now I'm on the other side of the table. And that's, for me, that's a huge advantage, because our approach at True Temper Sports is to be a partner and to grow the business smart and organically with sell-through, not sell-in, and not push product and jam the pipeline with inventory. But it's a fine line retailers face, where you want the added discount, you want access to the newest, latest, greatest products. And a lot of times with that come big inventory demands or requests. And I think what you're seeing now is, it's been 5 years probably of just a glut of inventory in the supply chain that just has taken forever to get out. And it's done a couple of things. One of the main things at retail, consumers are used to everything being on sale. It's new now. It's old now. It was new 6 months ago. It's a different decal, different graphics. And the pressure, especially if specialty is, if it's new, you have to carry it. How can you be a lacrosse specialty store and not carry this? So you have to have it. And there's a lot of new brands, and they're doing a lot of good things. But it puts even more pressure on retailers to pick and choose where they spend their dollars. And at the end of the day, you have to be smart about where you spend them and pick partners. And it was better in the early days. I can say that because it was STX and Brian. It was Lax Road and Backrack and Allman and a few others. There weren't a lot of manufacturers, weren't a lot of retailers. It's a lot bigger pond now, and it's a lot tougher to pick and choose and say no. But to do it, you have to say no. And from a manufacturer standpoint now, we do. We're saying no to dealers, trying to keep it tight and support the partners we have and grow with them rather than grow just by opening more dealers and getting a bigger footprint. So it's a changing marketplace. I think it's coming together. The consolidation is almost over, I hope. But I think it's changing for the better.
Sure. And certainly it speaks to a lot of aspects of the assets of the lacrosse market, which is, you know, a very savvy, high adoption consumer that cares about style and fashion in a way that a lot of other athletes don't, and that's what creates opportunity for new products. It's what for existing manufacturers. It's what creates opportunity for new brands to emerge. And a significant factor in the supply chain volume was that was formalized in 2016 was the departure of two large retailers. And Ben, I'm interested in your perspective on how you see that impacting the landscape with the closure of Total Lacrosse and Total Hockey, as well as the Sports Authority.
Yeah, the relationship between, it's a two-way street with the fact that retail stores have closed and manufacturers now are kind of tightening up on who they extend credit to. The reason that happened is because they weren't getting paid. A lot of obviously the retail stores that closed were totally undercapitalized and needed to file for bankruptcy, but there are a lot of smaller retail stores across the country. You mentioned from Cleveland, Midwest Lacrosse recently closed their doors. Smaller lacrosse specialty stores across the country have closed their doors because they were extended ridiculous lines of credit from the manufacturers who were chasing, who wanted booking orders. And it, again, it's a two-way street. So the closing of Total is not really that surprising to us at BSN because we've seen it in other sport categories too. Lacrosse is just, you know, the newest one on the block. The same thing happened with soccer specialty stores in the 90s, and it's a trend. So I think Jerry's being very intelligent with the way that he's going about his business and not extending credit lines to every, you know, retailer who wants his product, because there are, especially historically, there's been brands that have done that and have really created the issues that we're experiencing now with the flood of inventory out in the marketplace. You know, when Total Hockey and Total Lacrosse go out of business, they had, you know, millions of dollars in excess inventory that were bought up by liquidators and are out on the street now. And, you know, when you're trying to compete in that marketplace, it makes it very difficult to compete profitably.
Right. And so what's next, John?
I think that's probably triggers the next step, right? I think that's actually a good stepping point to the next level, which is, I think manufacturers have to be more responsible with who they open up with and what they produce. And I think there will be, you know, probably a stronger evaluation on that partnership. I think it's that, what's next is probably is looking to continue to service the customer as best we can. There are, people like Dick's do a great job of selling beginners their first set of equipment. I think for us is how do we continue to engage with the customers? How do we continue to tell the story with the manufacturer support that it's about performance, right? It's not just a new head. I think that's something we all have to get better is educating the consumer on performance. And then from a lax.com standpoint, it's how do we continue to engage? How do we provide great customer service? How do we service the entire cycle, whether it's retail at all different levels, as well as team, as well as provide the content opportunity?
So I think that kind of characterizes a little bit of a state of lacrosse retail. I want to kind of open it up a little bit and talk about some specific trends. So one that we've seen proliferate over the last 5 to 6 years is the trend of customization. And I mentioned, you know, a couple minutes ago about how important style and fashion are within the sport of lacrosse, and I think customization is a reflection of that. I think, you know, each of your capacity and ability to handle that, you know, whether you're brick and mortar, lacrosse specialty, e-commerce, or team, changes. So, you know, starting with you, Ben, like, how do you handle customization, and where does it fall in your purview?
Yeah, customization is crucial to our business. We want to sell customized product because that's what the players ultimately want. So the fact that Nike and Under Armour, you know, again, our two biggest brands are, they're all over the colleges, all over the TV in the spring when you're watching college games. And now the teams can emulate what Notre Dame's doing on, you know, Saturday when they're playing. The high school teams can wear the same style uniforms. It's been great for us, the fact that the teams can customize products and look like the biggest programs in the country. It also makes the need for a sales pro more important because you need to work directly with somebody who understands that business, you know, somebody who can sell you a custom helmet, who can facilitate your custom glove order, somebody who can go on Nike and design the Nike uniform and process that order for you, because the end consumer can't go do that directly. So our, you know, it goes back to our the educational standpoint for what I have to do is train up the sales pros so they're aware of how to, you know, how to fill those gaps and process those types of orders. But customization's been great for our business.
And to talk about it from the perspective of footwear, apparel, bags, gloves, helmets, you know, only spans so far of the gap. There's also this trend line of stringing and dyeing. John, how does Lex.com approach that?
From the team side, just to add to what Ben said, I mean, it's really helped our business. So it's you know, in 2 years, our team business has gone from 15% of our total revenue to 40. We also have found it to be a really, really good tool for identifying new customers. Our online stores, which we do custom gloves or helmets or team apparel, the consumers that we're pulling out of our online stores makes up 15% of our total online business. So it's actually been one of the positive things in the sport. And I think it does, you know, it's probably hurt some of the apparel side, but it has definitely brought new revenue streams to people like us. On the stringing side, I think that is has always been out there. It seems to definitely have come to life the last couple of years. I mean, you've got some really good manufacturers. You know, you've got East Coast Dyes and String King. All those guys have done a great job on bringing to life different products out there. And we do a good job, I think. It's always room for improvement, but giving consumers an opportunity on how they can customize their stick, right? It's whether it's the pocket or colors, I think that speaks to a little bit what Jerry talked about. What made this sport so unique in the beginning is giving kids the ability to create their own identity as a player.
And I think, you know, Jerry, one of the things I'm interested in your kind of perspective on as it relates to the difference between what it meant to be able to customize your style 20 years ago versus now is that you can argue it's gotten easier. It's gotten easier to get stick with a you know, wild color mesh or to, you know, outsource the stringing of your pocket or the dyeing of your head or to learn how to do it yourself. So how do you regard that as being a premium option, particularly as it relates to heads and handles?
Well, I think what you see is the focus now is less. It used to be what's the best head, what's the best handle. Now it's what's the mesh, how's it strung. The heads are almost become commodities. Let's face it, they're nylon, they're plastic, they're 6 1/4 by 10 inches, and there's a lot of different variations, so we all know that, but what gets the kids excited now is the mesh being used, the color on the mesh, that their specific pocket, how they string it. And that's great from a retail standpoint, I suppose, because you get, like John said, you get good stringers in retail, online, working for you. That's huge. From my side, from True Temper Sports making heads, it's kind of hard to say that's great for us because you don't want everything to be a commodity, but it is what it is. And at the end of the day, it probably makes sense because, you know, 5 years ago, there was probably 100 different heads out there between the different specs and the different models. And that's overkill and was hard on retail as well. But that customization has changed. When I say originally back for retail, it's more about specialty. It's the shirts, the shorts, the look. So when the kid went to school, you identified as a lacrosse player. You're one of those crazy kids that played lacrosse. That was the customization. Now lacrosse is more mainstream, and it's you're a mid to high pocket. You're this guy, you're that guy, and it defines you as a player, where before it was more about you as an individual.
Sure. Makes sense. I think that as we turn our attention forward and try to project or forecast what we think is coming down the line, one of the ways to help understand that is to put lacrosse consumerism or lacrosse retail in contrast to how people buy other stuff, whether it's consumer electronics or casual clothes or whatever else. And so, you know, Ben, how do you expect, you mentioned floating Amazon warehouses and drone delivery processes. How do you expect, what do you think are the realistic differences in the way that lacrosse players buy their stuff compared to all their other stuff in their life?
Yeah, I would say brick and mortar specialty lacrosse is a dying breed. It's brick and mortar specialty lacrosse stores, your one-off type stores out west and in the Midwest, some of those stores will probably continue to close. There is a demand and need for your e-com source. You know, John has a content website where people go and get the news, and it's not just a place to go buy your product. So that type of resource for the consumers is always going to be important. But I mean, the big bad wolf is most definitely Amazon. They've changed the world, you know, technologically, operationally, and they've, you know, retail is just a component of what they've changed. But they've certainly changed it, and they're going to continue to. So I would expect the major brands to sell more product through the Amazon channel. I don't see why they wouldn't. They have the best capability and operations in the world in terms of delivering goods to the consumer. So that's kind of where I see it. And then I see from a team side, I hope Amazon doesn't get in the team business, because they'll probably change that too. But, team is something where you need touches and you need relationships and you need to be working with the customer really one-on-one, because there's, every product's different, every order is different. And then you got to go chase receivables, and you're dealing with clubs and schools and POs and invoices. So it's not as fun as, going and buying something at the retail store. There's a lot of back-end work that has to get done on the team side.
Right. I think, John, one of the elements of the question is that it's not simply about the way in which the business manifests itself. It's also the way in which retail operations, those that wake up thinking about lacrosse every day, impacts the future and the trajectory of the sport. I know that that's something that you're passionate about. Before diving into what that is, the question is, how can retailers impact the future of the sport?
I think that the big difference is, so iPhone 10 comes out. Yeah, they have massive budgets to communicate to the consumer what the brand attributes are, what the technology improvements are. The reality is the manufacturers in our sport don't have those budgets. So I think, one of the things that probably holds off Amazon is that you need that consumer interaction with retail, ideally online, but you need the manufacturers and retail to work together to communicate what the brand is, what that new brand is all about, or what that new head or shaft. I mean, I think that's one thing that has probably hurt us, or has been a little bit of a weak point for our sport, is it's great that new products come out, but are we really educating the consumer on what the brand attributes are? Is it really going to improve performance? And I think that's where, as we look ahead, it's using our technology, cloud-based systems like NetSuite, using our technology, using a much better informed customer service team to provide those solutions and help bring to life some of those brand attributes that the consumer is really not aware of.
Right. Jerry, in terms of what it means for the game, one of the things that Steve alluded to this morning was a meeting last fall where U.S. Lacrosse hosted SFIA members and talked about what are some of the things organizationally that can be done to drive the sport forward. And we spoke about the athlete development model this morning as being a way in which the national governing body can lead a conversation about making the sport stickier to young players and the benefits that that has for everyone involved. And my understanding is that that was widely adopted or comparatively widely adopted. What's your perspective on how the sport's future influences the components of retail partners and retail distributors?
Well, I think we all need to work together to grow the sport as a whole. It seems like right now, for the past 10 years, it's everybody fighting for their slice of the pie. And the sport has got to the point where, unless you are playing on a club, the goal is to get a scholarship. You know, my kids are a little older now, but I was up at Falston Rec, and everybody's kid was getting a scholarship, and they were all going to Maryland and Hopkins and Northwestern for the girls. But back then, you know, Falston Rec had 650 boys in the program, 450 girls at Rec. Now there's a tenth of that. I think what's happened is you're either the top of the line or aspiring to be. There's not a good home for those kids who just want to go play, have fun, and show up. And part of what U.S. Lacrosse suggests allows for that. It's not six-year-olds on travel teams practicing 4 days a week and playing every Saturday and Sunday because they're going to be a star midfielder at Hopkins. I think we need to make it more accessible and fun at those younger ages. And plenty of those kids are going to grow and aspire and graduate up to be great players. But how do we get the recreation part back? Kids that are playing for fun. And I think we need to do it together because we all grow as the sport grows. And part of that is everybody putting their ego aside. And business is business, and everybody's fighting for their own share. But if we can work together towards a common goal with the leadership of U.S. Lacrosse, SFIA working together, it makes sense.
Right. And Ben, what BSN represents or theoretically represents, is access to resources that, you know, speak to some of the things that John was talking about, both in terms of communication and messaging, but then also I understand that you guys have, you know, through, you know, different elements of education, also try to put your stamp on the way in which the sport is perceived within certain communities as well. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, we've invested a substantial amount of money in coaching clinics across the country. To us, for participation to continue to grow, coaches need to be educated effectively. U.S. Lacrosse has done a good job at it, but there's always more need for more coaching clinics. So what our company has done is we've hosted since August, we've hosted 14 coaching clinics, and we have six more that Joel White is putting together. You know, our thought is, in these new emerging markets, the lacrosse is kind of controlled by a lot of the club and select business that is not necessarily the best thing for the growth of the sport. It's one of those things that has led to players starting out and they hear that Johnny's getting a scholarship and they're not, so they quit the next year. You need more coaches to create more teams in these emerging pockets. Now, I'm in Dallas now, and I've seen the other side of that, the flip side of that coin. In the Metroplex of Dallas, it's not a state-sanctioned sport. So Highland Park, for example, has two JV teams, two varsity teams, two freshman teams, because they're a 6A high school with 2,000 students at it, and there's a real need for that spring sport of lacrosse there to keep kids active. Not every single kid can make a 20-person baseball team roster in the spring. So it's a two-way street, but we do feel like coaches education is a very, very crucial and important part of continuing to grow participation.
I want to open it up for questions here in a minute, but before we do, I want to give each of you an opportunity to talk about, you know, what your organizations are doing to prepare for the future. I know that we've spoken about it, you know, maybe obliquely or attacking that question from the side. But in terms of initiatives going forward and what are the types of things that you're focusing on, you know, John, I'll start with you. What are some of Lax.com's priorities as you analyze 2, 3, 4 years down the road?
Before answering that, I just want to add to that last question. I think, you know, one of the things for me that would be great to come out of this you know, whether it's LaxCon or the Inside Lacrosse Summit, is taking some leadership, right? U.S. Lacrosse, take some leadership, get 20 of the top players together in this sport, and do get to 30,000 feet and do one initiative, right? Everyone in this room sent out a Friday email on what the tune-in schedule is for ESPN broadcast for college weekends. It would have such a major impact on our sport, right? It would bring awareness, you'd create new fans, you'd create a little bit more pizzazz to the college game. It's easy to do. Everyone's sending out emails. But, you know, if it's String King or BSN or East Coast Dyes or Next or 3D, if everyone sent that out, your message would be so solid. And if we don't do those big 30,000-foot initiatives, TV's going to be gone. I mean, if it wasn't, you know, for a couple key people at ESPN, ESPN would never be covering the sport. And I think we can't take for granted some of the assets that the sport currently enjoys, because it's going to go away. And I think that's where the sport needs to come together. I agree on the coaching. I agree we got to make it fun. But we, as all vested people in this business, we've got to do something to kickstart the energy in the sport. And there are initiatives like the email broadcast schedule that are super easy to execute and would have a very big impact on what we've got going. So, sorry, a little tangent.
No,
but
I respect that.
For us, I think it's really making sure we're looking at technology as a way to strengthen our backbone going forward, using technology to better measure renewals, better measure customer satisfaction, and really trying to use as a point of difference for delivery.
Ben, for you guys?
Yeah, we continue to invest in the sport, like I mentioned, in the coaching clinics, but also with personnel to have more resources for our growing sales force out there. Our plan is to continue to grow that 750 number and hire people with great relationships that, again, can use lacrosse as a subset of what they sell. And, you know, we're continuing to invest in new employees. Also, from a technology standpoint, with the way that lacrosse's products are purchased through online player pay, in a lot of places we've continued to invest in that technology as well. And we have some, you know, new fun initiatives that will be released and hopefully by the end of Q1 of this year to continue to kind of separate ourselves in that marketplace. But it's a... Corporately, lacrosse is a very important small piece of everything that we do at BSN. So it is it's received the pat on the back from our executive management team to continue to invest in it and grow it.
Excellent. And then for you, Jerry, obviously as True Timber begins to develop and True Lacrosse begins to emerge, what are the initiatives for you guys?
You know, our main goal is we're a product-driven company. True Timber Sports, we've dominated the golf shaft industry for over 100 years, over a billion golf shafts sold, hockey, over 2 million sticks sold. Lacrosse, we've been in since 2004 as a manufacturer just recently to our own brand. But we're going to be a product-driven company, and my goal is we're going to forge those partnerships with the retailers, with the dealers, and everything we do is to grow our business through our partners so that we're both healthy. And that gives us touch points in different regions with boots on the ground where we can't be. But our partners are, and they know what's important, what's needed in their backyard, and what's important to them. So we're going to grow our business through our retail partners rather than at their expense.
Excellent. All right, so at this point, we'll open it up for questions.
Hi, Tyler Steinhardt. I'm based out of D.C. I'm a shoot-off for soldiers. So I've heard of this phrase, everyone competing over the same slice of the pie. We need to grow the pie in the sport of lacrosse for a while now. But I think the real barrier to entry, and it's easy with this whole talk about the pie, is that we scapegoat club teams or we scapegoat U.S. lacrosse in a lot of ways, in my opinion. But what's the role of the manufacturer in the sense that the barrier to entry for people playing is that it's $100 for a stick, and then $50 for elbow pads, and $75 for gloves, and $100 for shoulder pads, and all this added up. What's the role of the manufacturer to offer free gear, or very, very subsidized gear, and then what's the future of the risk for yourselves that you said the heads are commodity, that it's plastic, we can 3D print this in maybe 5 years. Is that great for the democratization of the sport and that we're able to have heads more there? So I just wanted you guys to speak to the role of the manufacturer in kind of growing this pie and what that means.
Well, I would say when growing the pipe, we need more people playing and getting new areas. And John will be the first to tell you, the last thing he wants us doing is giving free gear away. Because, again, that's a part of the problem with the retail landscape right now. There's a lot of free gear out there. And it's not a natural result of all the customization is you have custom helmets, teams worth of custom gloves. Those 20 years ago, those were retail sales at retail margins. Now they're team sales at team margins where there's a bigger chance of error. Stuff gets screwed up. Clubs fold. You don't get paid. So I don't think giving, and trust me, our goal at True Temper Sports is really good product at a value at retail. But giving product away, I don't think, is the answer. We can partner better with U.S. Lacrosse, perhaps, or as an industry, to have New Start programs, which there are a lot of them out there, and grants. But the key really is just to get more people interested and sticking with it. Again, the whole problem is it's 8 to 18 and they're gone. So you constantly have to bring that new segment in.
The good news is that your basic starter set is, you know, $150 to $180 for little kids. So it's not crazy expensive compared to other sports. And again, that's where, you know, guys like Dick's have done a really good job of getting kids in affordable gear, you know, for their first year or two. So again, looking at other sports, you know, whether it's, you know, baseball or even soccer, I mean, it's that $150 investment is pretty good considering, you know, what else is out there.
Hi, Max Frater with Lacrosse Talk. I'm kind of piggybacking off of that a little bit. Like you said, if you walk into a Dick's Sporting Goods, you're not going to get the level of customer service that you need for somebody who isn't really quite sure what they're looking for, which is why I think there's still a need for specialty stores in the world of lacrosse, but we've all agreed that they're moving more towards majority of online shopping as opposed to the storefront. So with that being said, you guys had mentioned before that the ways to outperform those big companies would be outservice them and then customer engagement. With much more hands-off transactions, with everything moving towards online, how do you maintain that high level of customer service and customer engagement?
I'll take a crack. For us, it's, I mean, it's all comes to, you know, the customer experience online. For those consumers that really know what they want, it's ease to finding product, good inventory, never putting something online where we're out of something. So that all triggers into renewals. But for the new players, you know, what we're doing and been focused on the last probably 12 months is how do we add a whole level of content to educate the consumer? When is it time to replace a head? When is it time to have your stick restrung? You know, what do you need? What should you be looking for in sizing gloves, arm pads, shoulder pads? How do you fit a starter set? So we certainly can do it on the phone with our customer service team, but we're also tackling that with content that we're producing to help answer some of those questions.
Yeah, and I'd piggyback on that. I think that the change is going to be, unfortunately, whether you like it or not, the small niche lacrosse shops, it's got to be, I couldn't imagine how they could stay afloat for a long period of time just based on the way that the retail market's shifting, period. It has nothing to do with lacrosse. It's just retail's changing. So to piggyback on what John said, I think you'll see more flavor makers on social media posting products from the manufacturers to get players, knowledge on the product. And, you know, the shift will continue to move to e-com and the Amazon route. It'd be great, you know, if every town could have a lacrosse shop there with a knowledgeable staff. It's just probably not feasible.
Yeah, Andy Hayes from Next. So my big question is, like, what is, because you guys have three different perspectives here, what is your strategy for working with all these private club operations and events, teams, and things like that? And the reason I ask that is I see the lacrosse market. I was more into soccer back in the day, where soccer was 25, 30 years ago before we decided to host the World Cup. No one has $1 billion like FIFA did to dump into the market here. So I look at our private organizations. I think a lot of us are desperate to find ways to work with all of you guys. And we have a level of engagement, which I've heard from all three of you guys multiple times with our customers. We see these kids at these events with our club teams year round. And so I'm curious to hear, like, what is the strategy from the retail, the manufacturers, to engage the private organizations that, frankly, see 500,000 of the lacrosse players who are the future customers of all of you guys year after year?
Well, Jim, from our standpoint is True Temper Sports, we would like to see that engagement go through a retail partner. Don't want to be dealing directly with teams where we're stepping on toes and quoting prices and selling, and it gets a little too cloudy. So that's where we would invest our resources to channel your expertise and your knowledge to benefit a retail partner or retail partners. But you're right, there are definitely touch points out there that weren't there 15 years ago. You guys, club programs, tournaments, that's where the kids get a lot of their information. Tournaments now, those kids, you know, 20 years ago, they all went to camp, overnight camp, got instruction. Now there are tournaments, they see all the new gear throughout the summer, which does kind of hurt that need for them to go in and see it at a retail level. I personally think retail is going to survive on a smaller scale, those that are smart about it and use the internet and their team sales to drive retail in their area and really bring it into a tighter circle and own that. That's where I come from. That's where I want to see it go. But neither here nor there. From your point, it's about partnerships with the retailers and helping support them. It's not us selling True to everybody. It's True through a retail partner. So our assets are their assets. It gives them more flexibility with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it falls into our group business. We absolutely want to work with you. Our best case study is 3D. They're a big customer of ours. You know, this year we're rolling out a new program or helping roll out a new program with 3D that STX is the title sponsor of. It's STX Rising. It's one acting as arms and legs on the ground selling that branded product. It's online stores as follow-up. It's getting into some of that customization. For us, we're servicing our customer, being 3D, but we're also gaining data. We're learning from the customers every time we're on site. So that's a big part of our business, and we welcome every and all of those opportunities.
And I guess from a BSN standpoint, we work with a number of organizations such as NXT. You know, it goes back to you can get two out of three, price, service, and quality, and we are not the cheapest option. We sell our quality and service. So a lot of private companies who are also for-profit shy away from working with BSN because they're very price-sensitive.
I'm Joe from Thrown Lacrosse, based in Brooklyn, New York. Just to kind of sum it up, as a manufacturer and a lax rat or whatever you guys want to call it, I heard a lot of different approaches that we can do, but I would like to try and focus on one like John brought up. And so you guys have different sides to this, and so I think you'll be partial to one or the other, but is it making the best product possible and then informing the sales chain? Is that what we need to do? Is it media and making something unique that continues to drive the game and get people that are past 18 or in the offseason coming back? Or is it customer relationship and understanding to make a video how to fit a guide and so someone doesn't have to call, make VODs? Is that what we need to do to try and corral the new players to make it easier for them? And, I mean, to Schomburg as well, I think the idea of starting kids young and proper equipment is what I built my entire company on. I'm originally from Cleveland, and I had nothing. The only reason my lifeline to lacrosse is my father was from Long Island. It's a sport my father played, and I was handicapped until I decided to go to the internet to learn and buy from lax.com and try and do it on my own, which changed everything for me and what I did with my life. So out of those three, is it, you know, on the manufacturer side, is it more on our media side to keep people entertained, or is it we just got to try and out custom service other sports and keep people engaged?
Yeah, and I think the beauty about the world we live in right now is that the measurability of things is so easy. And, it's hard to say which one of those is exactly the right ingredient, but you can measure each one of those, and that's what we're trying to do a better job of. You know, is it the videos where we're educating consumers? Is it the social media? Or do consumers want to know about the product attributes? And I think, we're using all those elements in our mix, and one of the things we're trying to do in 2017 is really do a better job on measuring which ones are most effective.
I think you'll see a better push going forward. I mean, let's be honest, the past 5 years, most lacrosse businesses, retail, manufacturers, it's been about survival. It's been a tough 5 years. And it's really hard to focus on growing the game when you're trying to keep the doors open and make the business work. I think the consolidation is almost over.
the goal, we need a healthy industry that can support the growth of the game. Because if everybody's struggling just to pay their bills and nobody can make it work, there's no money out there to grow the game. So I think we're close to being where we need to be. I think the consolidation is almost over. And I think the East Coast Eyes, the String Kings, a lot of these new brands, true, help give retailers more options to build a healthy business that makes sense for them. So going forward, we can focus on growing the game. But I think it's been a challenge, really, just industry-wide for the past 5 years. Hasn't helped.
Thanks. Jack Huber, Sniper. So I'm also a Lax rat, and I grew up playing Lax.com fantasy lacrosse back in the day. So I have two questions. First question, and Terry, feel free to jump in on this one. First pick in the 2017 fantasy lacrosse draft, who would it be? And then we've talked about staying ahead of the curve in the industry from a technological standpoint. Love to hear any thoughts on what you guys think the next big innovation is going to be. Is it customized shoulder pads? I don't know. Thanks.
My first pick in the 2017 fantasy lacrosse draft would be Pat Spencer, the attackman from Loyola. I have a feeling that his production compared to what would have been the most logical choice coming back from last year, which is Dylan Malloy, based on the amount of other players that graduated from Brown, I think that with the returning talent complementing Pat's production, that would be my choice. He's also on the cover of the February issue of the Inside Lacrosse magazine. As far as the next step of innovation, I'll leave it to the experts.
I would, if it's a point per ground ball, I'm getting Joel White as my number one pick for sure. I think somebody mentioned it earlier, but 3D printing is something we're conscious of, certainly, even on the cloth side. I mean, I don't understand the technology, but it seems like it's moving quickly. So I would expect that to be one of the newest advancements we'll see in the lacrosse world.
I think I'd probably, you're going to continue. I think the beauty is you're going to continue to see what other sports are doing. On the uniform side, I think, folks like Nike will continue to use learnings from their football investments on, uniforms or apparel. The product side, I think it's, one, it's probably fine-tuning what the product offering is by each manufacturer and then making sure we're starting to tell that technology performance story better. I don't think you're going to see anything earth-shattering the next 2 years. I think it's going to be more of a focus of clean up the offering and talk about performance.
I think what you're going to see is more about materials, and there's not a whole lot in the pipeline as far as groundbreaking technology, but materials are changing. From our standpoint, we learned a ton from golf and from hockey, what works there, what doesn't. But I think same old goal, lighter, stronger, more flexibility, and most of that has to do with materials and being able to do it in a cost-effective way. Again, I'm sure we could have, I know we could have way better everything, but at what you got to be able to sell it at retail. So the key is to make the best possible product we can at a price at retail that makes sense. And it's going to be about materials, I think, going forward. Composites, obviously with the handles, we've seen what that's done and where it's going. And there's a lot of new and interesting materials out there that are going to change.
Yeah, I think you'll see probably more innovation on the women's game than the men's game. With the headgear coming out, that's going to create a whole new opportunity. I mean, it's I know it probably the purists are cringing about it, but from a retail side, it's great news. But I think that's going to force the more investment in the women's game on the plastics and heads, stringing is going to be a big opportunity. We're seeing it already on the women's side. The customization on the girls' heads, all that. I think the next 2 years will probably see more advancements in the women's game than the guys' game.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.